Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Monday night. It's time for Trek Talking 2. This is our overflow show, if you want to say, from our regular Thursday night show. And this is kind of a podcast where we just kind of have fun and we talk about whatever we want, different topics, maybe review some old episodes, whatever. And that's what we're going to do tonight. You may have noticed we had the Voyager theme song at the top of the show. And that's because tonight we're going to be talking about Death Wish, which was the 18th episode of the second season of Star Trek Voyager. It originally aired on February 19th, 1996. The episode features a new member of the Q Continuum named Quinn and appearances by Star Trek The Next Generation alumni, Jonathan Frakes, and of course Q himself, John Delancey. And basically, Quinn is a member of the Q Continuum, and he wants to commit suicide. And Q, John Delancey Q, is there to prevent it. And that's what the episode was about, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And the reason why we're going to talk about that tonight, in case you hadn't guessed, is because Q was on Picard, and Q died. And a lot of fans were like, well, you know, Q's immortal, he can't die, and you know, so on and so forth. Well, yeah, he can die. And we're going to talk about that. So our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We'll be live with you here next hour. So give us a call, 646-668-2433, and share your thoughts on Q dying or the episode Death Wish. We'll be here. We'd love to hear from you. But before we get too far, let me introduce to you my awesome Trekspurts. Of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, with you as usual. But with me, we have David. David's from Portland. How are you doing tonight, David?
I'm pretty good. Just kind of waking up from sleep, taking a nap.
I hear that. I've been doing that a lot today. We also have with us from Portland as well, we have Paul. You guys know him as the wine guy. How you doing tonight, Paul?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. It's been a busy Monday for me, so it's flown by fairly quickly. Glad to hear your voice back to normal, man, that you're feeling better.
Oh, yeah.
Rough week for you.
I'm feeling much better. I'm not better. I'm not out of the woods, but I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that's encouraging. And we also have with us Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. Busy day at work also for me because we're getting to the end of the school year before summer school starts. And, oh, my phone just said we went down a degree. I looked at my phone just as I called in. It's like, oh, gee, there are 3 digits in my temperature. okay, we're sweating, we're getting to it now. But it well, back down to 99.
Good gravy. Well, that's nuts, 100. Man. No,
wow.
Thank you. No, thank you, sir.
I just want to take a second before we start the show, guys, to just let you know I have COVID. I came down with it last week. I'm fully vaccinated, and I think that's the thing that's making me able to do tonight's show and Thursday night show. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do Thursday night show because I was in bad shape, but I was able to get through it, and I'm here now. And I just got to tell you guys, this is real. It is serious. Take it seriously. Get your vaccinations and take care of yourself because it affects everybody differently. It affected my daughter, who's 26, differently than it affected me and my wife. In fact, it affected me a lot differently than it affected my wife. So you don't know how it's going to affect you, and it's not worth taking the chance. Trust me on that one. So stay safe, follow the guidelines, and please get vaccinated. It's the best way to protect you and your loved ones. So that's it. I'm going to step off my soapbox now, and we're going to get into some Trek talk. And you guys ready to do some Trek talking?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course.
So tonight we're going to talk about Death Wish. And if you haven't seen the episode, spoiler alert, if you have, here's the trailer that played on UPN for this episode just to kind of set the mood for you.
It's the War of the Qs.
I demand asylum. You would ask these puny humans to protect you from me?
They're all powerful.
We've been transported back in time to the birth of the universe.
Almighty.
You can't hide from me, Q.
And all-consuming.
We've been reduced to subatomic proportions.
And if they can't resolve their conflict...
What the hell is going on?
It's all over.
Ready or not, here I am.
On the next Star Trek Voyager.
So that's the trailer for the episode Death Wish. So I've been homesick, so I've been watching lots of Star Trek, and I watched Star Trek V yesterday, which, if you guys don't know it, is my favorite Star Trek movie. I love Star Trek V. I've got my reasons, but I love it. Okay, it's
wow, outlier, man! You make me want to rewatch it.
it's my go-to movie. We've talked about it before. It's just a fun TOS episode type movie. There's no V'gers, no Galactics. It's just a fun romp of a Star Trek movie, and I love it. And Spice Williams is in it, one of the best Klingons. We've had her on the podcast many times. I love her to death. So, yeah, it's my go-to movie. So I watched it yesterday, and I had this thought. I thought, you know, I wonder if the creature was actually Q, was a Q that they imprisoned on the planet. And I thought, because in this episode, they imprison Q in an asteroid. And, of course, Janeway, they break him out. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the being on the planet could have been an imprisoned Q all along, and he needed the starship to break him out like Q needed Voyager to break him out of the asteroid. And then I'm thinking, yeah, that makes sense. That could be. But I don't know. Maybe not. But either way, I like the movie. And I just thought maybe that was a Q. Before anybody knew what a Q was or how Q worked or what Q did, could have been a Q. Just like Trelane on TOS could have been a younger Q as well. But let's swing back to this episode. So they find an asteroid that's floating through space, but it's an abnormal asteroid. And they do a scan, and there's something in this asteroid. Something's not quite right in this asteroid. And upon closer investigation, Quinn shows up on the bridge and thanks them for getting him out of his prison. What we find out is that Quinn is bored with being, a god creature, member of the Q continuum.
Immortal.
And he wants to die. And that's where the episode begins. And this episode raises a lot of interesting questions. And it's a morality play, which Star Trek does so well. And in this case, it happens to be Q or Quinn. I think we got to have different names. We've got Quinn and we got Q. There's two different Qs here. And Quinn wants to commit suicide. Q wants him to stop, doesn't want to allow him to. Now, the Q continuum imprisoned Quinn in this asteroid for his own protection and for the protection of the continuum. Now, Q never makes it clear why the suicide of Quinn would have this snowballing domino effect on the Q continuum. At least, not that I caught. Did any of you guys catch the reason why Quinn committing suicide would have this negative effect on the continuum? Did anyone catch that?
You kind of made it an idea that it was the entire Q continuum was rather connected, unified, and that a loss of the Q is a loss to part of the continuum. Though Q does admit that they can sacrifice Qs, and the loss isn't, the loss is better for them to be gone than them to have, them being gone for their crimes, and they are gone from inhabitants, which is confusing.
Right, which brings you back to the question where the Q believe in corporal punishment, and I believe Q says that they have put two other Qs to death for crimes. What crimes? I don't know. They don't elaborate, but crimes against the Q continuum that warranted death. So the Q continuum believes in corporal punishment, but not in suicide. They won't allow Quinn to commit suicide.
Admit that they punish Q, which Q keeps trying to talk around, because they did take his power away at one point, and due to doing something good, got his powers back.
And we're going to go in a full circle here right now, because excuse me, guys.
Go around the block.
I still have COVID.
And breathe a bit.
This brings me right back to what I was thinking at the top of the show. Punished, and his powers were taken away, and he sought asylum on the Enterprise D with Picard. You guys remember that episode, right? And so he's hiding on the Enterprise, and all these aliens, all these different races are coming after him because they all want a piece of Q, and Picard protects Q and gives him his asylum. And you guys got to go watch the episode. But he eventually gets his powers back and everything is fine. Well, I got to thinking about this when I watched this episode. And I'm wondering, now Q, help me out here, guys. Q does not follow a linear time like we do, correct?
Like, correct.
Q, tomorrow is yesterday, which is next month, which is last year for Q, right? Something along
correct.
Those lines? Q's not born and then 100 years later he dies. Q is like tomorrow might be, I mean, time is different for Q. It's not like it is for us. So if Q goes back to the 1800s, for us, that might be, a second ago for Q, or it might be a second from now for Q. He's not linear, right? He's kind of like the Bajoran wormhole prophets, right?
Yeah.
Type of a thing.
Prophecies, right.
So,
well, look at the
look
at the three people. Look at the three people Quinn helped.
Right.
He gave help to Isaac Newton by making sure the apple fell on him. He made sure that this gentleman from the 60s was able to fix an issue so that Woodstock, it wasn't stopped, and visited Riker's great-grandfather.
Thaddeus.
Thaddeus.
So I had this theory when I was watching this episode, guys, that I wanted to drop on you guys. I'm not sure if Q's can actually die of old age or natural causes, because I don't think those things affect Q. But we know that they can be killed because Q says that they have put Q's to death for violating their most sacred laws. Do you think that what happened in Star Trek Picard was Q being punished for killing Quinn in this episode?
No,
I don't know, man. That seems like a reach.
And why?
I don't explain why Q was being punished. I don't even think Q was being punished.
I think Q was just reaching a spot where he just. I'm not as much sure Q's dying as Q's moving on to a new existence.
Okay. All right. That's cool.
Well, all that stuff in Picard, you know, when any of that stuff's on there, and who knows to what degree this is deliberate, right? Because it all kind of serves, you know, whatever purposes you have. But it's all super vague, right? It's like there's the assumption. It's like you never have a scene where you know definitively that Q is dying, or someone says you're dying for this reason, and there's any – you never see any other perspective other than his. Right, and he says, "I'm dying at some point." And is he just making that assumption? Because when he snaps his fingers that one time, it doesn't work. Yet when he does it at the end, he kind of implies that that's going to take all the strength he has to be able to do it. Right, when he's able to snap them back at the end, he goes, "This will probably take everything I have." He says words to that effect. Right, so he's making this assumption or kind of telling us this one thing, but we don't really have any objective information from any other quarter to have us know that we can put any faith in this. Right? Do they die? We don't know. I mean, we're accepting what we're told, which in science fiction is usually a really, really bad idea. Right? We're only getting like one, you know, super narrow perspective. But there's nothing to – it's like if we're to think that he is being punished for what happened in this episode with his, you know, eventual compassion for Quinn, they on Picard have to tell us, right? Unless there's some reference to that and there's some connective tissue to the previous story, it's just too random a connection, I feel. It's like they have – it's their responsibility to tell us something or dangle some little thread of a hint that lets us justify it together, but there's zero evidence for any of it. And we still don't really know that he is dying because we didn't see him disappear. I mean, they left it very open-ended in kind of a cool way, you know, which I think is, you know, whatever his situation is, or maybe he's made a bad assumption. Maybe he's not really dying, or maybe he says he is because he just wants to do something. I mean, we just don't know. So all you can do is take the dialogue at face value.
So in a way, you're saying like he's kind of like a plot armor.
Say again. Oh. I'm sorry. It broke up on me.
Oh, I was saying you're basically saying that Q is basically kind of like a plot armor.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, I really love that moment where he is there with Picard in the last episode, right? And he's basically saying goodbye, right? And it's that whole moment where he's like, "See you out there," right? And basically, it's kind of like one person facing the idea of mortality to another, right? It's just like that seems to imply that he thinks he's gonna die because he's going off into the great unknown. It's like the idea that, you know, as omnipotent as they may be, being immortal and able to move back and forth through time and all that stuff, that kind of implies that Q doesn't himself really know what happens when you die, that they're the idea of, you know, cessation of existence, they don't really know definitively. And they're kind of at the end of things, if it really is the end of things for Q as well, kind of puts them on an even playing field with you know, mortal man. So it's interesting, you know, but there's 150 different ways they could easily bring that character back. And I mean, TV shows do that all the time where it's just like, you know, you say one thing and then you go, oh, well, what really happened was da, 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 da. I mean, they could easily do something like that where it was like, I thought, you know, and you just make some explanation and they can bring him back if they want to. So, cause we've seen nothing definitive that you would actually take as like legit evidence to really, really believe he's dead. I mean, I think they want you to think he is because it's poetic and it's nice, but if they choose to undo it, it's as easy as snapping their fingers.
Well, remember who shot J.R.? He's
supposed to be coming back in season 3.
Well, I didn't count. I should have, but I didn't. Did he appear in 6 episodes? I
total
don't know.
Across franchises?
No, in this season, in season 2 of Picard, was he seen in 6 episodes?
Oh, Picard. You know, I don't know, man. That's a good question. I'm not sure. Feels like less.
I think it's less. I didn't count him, but when they made the announcement, he went out there and he said that he signed a contract for 6 episodes. I know he was in the last one. You know, he was in the first one. That's 2. He visited with Guinan. That was 3.
The first time we met Rene Picard.
Yeah, when he meets Rene Picard, that was 4. So were there 2 more episodes? Was he on 2 more times? Or do we still have 2 episodes left for him to show up in next season? You know, and because Q travels through time, just because we see him die in this episode of Picard, you know, right here, that doesn't mean that that's chronologically when he actually ceased to be Q. Right.
Well, then okay. I got a question for you. I got a Picard
Jim's
trivia
question
for you.
Okay, hold on. Jim's question. Q was in Stargazer, Penance, Assimilation, Watcher, Fly Me to the Moon, Mercy, and Farewell. This is where he is given credit for in IMDb.
All right.
7 episodes.
7, and he said he had to sign a contract for 6. So he lied.
He can adjust.
Yeah, he does that. So listen, guys, we got to take a really quick break here. I don't know if you guys remember when Q gives Adam Soong his calling card. And it's a 3D printed calling card. And on the calling card is a giant Q. And underneath it is a phone number. I don't know if any of you guys called that phone number, because I definitely did. And we talked about this on Trek Talk in a little bit. And I put the article up on our Facebook page for you guys. But if you didn't know it or you didn't call it, I'm going to go to commercial with, if you called that number, the message that you would get from Q. So here it is. There it goes.
Hello. You have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal minds cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.
And we're back. So what do you guys think about that? Was that not great? Was that not perfect, Q?
That's the persona I know and love of the guy.
That's the cue.
So I got to just point out one thing real quick, just because, you know, I like to think that, you know, John DeLancey's still got a lot of miles in him, right, as far as an actor, I would hope, because he sure seems like he does. He seems like he's hale and healthy. So I would like to think that, you know, we're not done seeing that guy, I hope. But in addition to all those episodes, just to point out, he's not above making an arrangement with that character to further portray him. And I will give you as evidence the fabulous Playmates toy commercial that he did for Playmates for Instagram, right? It's like he's in character as Q, and is when they first started to do more PR to launch the return of the Star Trek, toy license. You know, Delancey reprised his role as Q, and there he is again. So it's just like, I don't think he's completely done playing that character, right? I mean, and if anything, I think fan reaction to his appearance this season is probably going to make there be more demand for him to return, either, you know, not necessarily on season 3 of Picard, but easily on something like, it seems like a perfect fit for him to be on Prodigy, or, you know, later seasons of Strange New Worlds, which is what we all really want to be talking about anyway. It's really hard to talk about an episode from 1996. I just want to talk about last week's.
He did show up on Lower Decks, though, which was funny.
Yeah.
Did he really? I have yet to come to terms with that show. I haven't made my peace with it yet, so I haven't really watched much of it.
He did show up on Lower Decks, which was really, really funny, the way they got him on Lower Decks. But,
well, I think it's a waste, man. I hope he's back at some point in the future. He's just, every time he would show up on Picard this season, it was like the energy level just, you know, increased, you know, exponentially. He's just a tremendous, it's so fun to go watch him on one of these old episodes, right? I mean, it really, really is. I hadn't watched a Voyager in so long. And he's just great. He's just really super. He's just a pro. His timing is hilarious. You know, I mean, you might be kind of like, initially I was just like, oh, man, bummer of a plot synopsis, right? This whole episode's about suicide. It's like, that's kind of a downer, right? You think it's going to be really depressing. But he manages to find moments of comedy all through that, you know, because he's just so gifted at being able to find those little moments without cheapening the theme. It's still a very strong morality play, like you were saying, about the nature of life and acceptance and forgiveness and letting go. I mean, a lot of these themes that you know kind of echoed on that we just saw in this season of Picard, right? They're kind of, you see little, you know, kernels and seeds of that in this episode, which is great. Kind of makes more of a through line for the character. But he's able to bring comedy to that subject. He's just tremendous, man. I've never seen him play this character once. It's not just gold every time. He's so great.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people that cut their teeth on TNG, who, like my wife, because Q was in the first episode, he's just identified with Star Trek. Like one of the, like the Enterprise, he's like just a character on the show. And he's been, I don't know how many episodes, maybe, I don't know, 8 of TNG, maybe, I don't know, 3 of Voyager, 1 on Deep Space Nine, 1 on Prodigy.
Oh, he has been on Prodigy already. I didn't realize that.
No, not Prodigy.
Not Prodigy,
yeah,
Picard.
I was about to say, wait a minute.
Yeah, Lower Decks and Picard. So he's
got it.
He's been in a lot.
Yeah, I think he's been at least 3 episodes of Voyager so far. Well,
yeah,
actually,
he's been on a lot. And of course, when Sisko punches him in the face, that's priceless on DS9. But I think he's just identified with Star Trek. He's one of the crew. And you either like them or you don't. A lot of fans don't like Q. They don't like the Q episodes.
Really?
They want nothing. Yeah, you hear the complaining. Well, fans will complain about anything anyways. But, you know, you'll hear them complaining about they don't like the Q episodes. It's not very Star Trek-y. They don't like them, blah, blah, blah. But I think the majority of the fans really do like Q. And he's part of Star Trek. And I think the reaction to his death in Picard season two, well, his presumed death, and was just evidence of that, you know. And when we did our fan reactions, people really, really seemed to like that. That reaction, that character interaction between Picard and Q, especially at the end, you know, when he says, I'll see you out there, and, you know, Picard hugs him. I mean, come on, people, really?
Yeah, that was a moment. That's a moment.
That was just like a Kodak moment all the way. You know, it doesn't get
I've been
much
lucky. I've not heard
that.
a lot of fans not like Q. I always thought most fans did because he's just so indelible. I didn't realize there was some, but you know, like you say, people complain about anything. But I've not heard a lot of that, fortunately. To my good fortune there. But he's, have you ever see him on Breaking Bad?
No, I've never seen, I saw him on Battlestar Galactica. That's about it.
No, he did like four episodes, this one arc on Breaking Bad, which was one of the best, you know, TV series in modern times. I mean, it's just a tremendous crime show. But he was amazing in that, played a very different character, played a father, a very stressed out, you know, overtaxed person, like an air traffic controller. And he's amazing. It's just so great to see him do something where it's like still totally him. It's like clearly John DeLancey, but it's a different kind of role. Right. And just goes to show all the range and you know, perspective he's got. He's great. He's done a ton of stuff.
He is funny. If you get a chance to meet him at a convention, it's like talking to Q. It really is.
What did you guys think of the way they depicted the continuum in this episode, right? I think we got to talk about that, right? Because during the hearing, right, and Tuvok is there representing Quinn, and at some point, I think it's Tuvok that comes up with the idea of, like, we need to see what this thing is that is the environment he's objecting to, right? And so a depiction of the Q continuum is brought up, which I thought was pretty inventive, man. What did you guys think?
Quinn says, oh, I've been the scarecrow, I've been the dog, I've been the pinball machine, I've been everything. I walked down the road that way, I walked down the road that way. I just it was an interesting concept, actually. But I thought there was more than four Qs altogether. But you know, because
we didn't see Q2.
Right, Q2 or Lady Q, played by Susie Plaxton.
Yeah.
I think they just gave us whoever the ones that were there weren't meant to be all the Qs there were, right? It's just like a representation was the impression I got, right? That there was just, you know, this is just a little tiny, you know, peek in the keyhole of what's there.
Sliver.
You know, that's depicted in, like, you know, super metaphorical way for us to be, because it's all we could, what do they say? It's all we would be able to comprehend, right? So they give
actually
us this kind of small town view.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jim, you mentioned that there was only four Q. Actually, there was five. I can't remember the actor's name, but he was the one that was punishing Q and got it powered back.
Q2.
That's
Q2? His name.
That's
Q2.
Q2 was the kid.
I've been on a panel where they regarded as Q and Q2. And those were the original first two Qs.
Is that Corbin Berenson? Is that the guy you're thinking of?
Yep.
LA Law veteran?
That was Q2.
Well, who was Q's kid?
That was John DeLancey's son.
Isn't that Q number five then?
Well,
yeah, because you have Quinn, you have Q, you have the lady Q, you have Q's son, and the guy who punished you, I guess Q2. So I guess that was five.
But we're not meant to just think there's such a small number of them, right? I mean, those are just the ones we've seen. Aren't we meant to think that there's a whole civilization of these beings, right?
That's
not just the handful that we've seen in episodes. I mean, the impression is if they're a continuum, they're a civilization. They're throughout the cosmos. I mean, that's the impression I get. I always got the feeling that
Didn't Guinan say in Picard that her race, the Elnorians, went to war with the Q? And they settled peace over a bottle of Tranya or whatever that stuff was.
Something like that, yeah.
So there must be like oogles of Qs out somewhere in the cosmos flying around or whatever it is they do.
Well, I would assume. Like we said, two have been executed. There's two more that we don't know about.
Yep. And if I remember correctly, wasn't there an episode of Voyager where the Q continuum was dying off and they needed to have baby Qs? And Q came and wanted to have a baby with Janeway?
Yep.
And then that's when Lady Q showed up, played by Susie Plaxton. And they're like, well, how are we supposed to have babies? And Janeway's like, the way everybody else does. And Q's like, oh, that's gross. Wasn't that episode?
Wow. I don't think I've actually ever seen that one, man. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
That was what? The Q and the Gray, I think it was? And
I think it was actually shortly after that, the Death Wish, because they wanted to touch base on, like, what happened to the Q continuum after that happened. So I guess there was, like, some sort of civil war going on.
Yeah. Yes, that's the one. They were having a civil war in the Q continuum, and John DeLancey brings Janeway to the continuum, and it's like a Gone with the Wind house, and he's a Union soldier, and the South is rushing the gates and blah blah blah. It's a whole civil war scenario that's going on, and that's what Q tells her.
Yeah, I think that also is. That also took place in the sense where, remember, and I think even in Death Wish they mentioned that. We couldn't really explain what the Q continuum is because our minds, human minds are like, you know, they can't comprehend it. Makes me wonder if this whole Civil War thing was the only way that they could explain what was going on in the Q continuum. So if we couldn't comprehend it, maybe they were just saying something like, you know, the whole Q continuum itself, like the whole idea that they can be mortal is the only way to explain, and for our way of thinking is, you know, maybe Q didn't actually die. That's just a way to say they're dying because that's the only way we can comprehend the Q continuum, but maybe his version of dying is something completely different than what we think. I don't know.
What, you know what? If they have to propagate, if they need to have a baby Qs, then there must be some type of mortality there, because why would you need a baby Q to carry on if you're going to be carrying on forever yourself, right? There might be something more going on there.
Something to comprehend, I guess.
Yeah, but if you haven't seen that episode, Paul, you got to check it out. The Q and the Gray.
I will definitely look into it. I'll watch anything that Susie Plaxton is. She is incredibly talented. I'm a big fan of hers from all of her stuff on Next Gen. I somehow did not know that she, you know, the mid-90s were a crazy time for me, man, and there's some stuff I missed out on. So it's fun to know there's a few nuggets out there that are still waiting to be discovered by me. So.
Well, did you notice the way Q was kind of hitting on Janeway and dropping comments to her through the whole episode? In the Q kind of way.
Yeah. Well, the way he shows up in her bed, for crying out loud.
Right, he shows up in her bed. And then next time they see her, he wants to have a baby with her. He wants to have a Q baby with Janeway. And that kind of pisses off Lady Q, played by Susie, and she shows up. And
by the way, Paul, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I think
spoiler
it'll be okay,
alert.
Man. I'm not expecting anything too.
Janeway shows him how to do the horizontal mamba.
Yeah.
But it was,
so
it
I think
was
the shelf
episode.
Life on spoilers is okay, right?
Yeah, I think so. But yeah, the whole Q continuum. I mean, we could talk about it forever. We just don't have enough information or know enough about it to really come up with a good explanation.
Yeah,
Q says he's dying, so we got to take him at his word. Because I think the Q that we end up seeing at the end of Star Trek Picard season 2 is a very, very different Q than the Q that we see in the beginning of TNG Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
I think he's come a long way.
I was about
he does
to
seem like he evolved. The character
Q,
definitely moved.
The Q wasn't really made up until like the beginning of TNG. And I actually think you're right, Jim, about Star Trek V. That might have actually been a Q locked up when the Enterprise came to visit because you needed a ship to get out of there. That actually makes sense. And I think that's probably where they got that idea from for the script of the Death Wish episode, that he needed a ship to get out. And so maybe he was a Q in that movie. So I don't know. I mean, even back then, they didn't know what Q was, really. And so they probably just wrote him off as a god.
Well, they knew what Q was, but they...
Star Trek V came in 2009.
No, 1989.
Encounter at Farpoint was 1987.
But this episode didn't come out until 1996.
Right.
So
but I'm
when
saying
they, when
is,
they
knew about Q when Star Trek V came out.
Right, but they hadn't created the idea yet that a Q could be imprisoned in a planet and would need a starship to escape until this episode.
Right.
And I only made that connection because I was laying on the couch sick. I watched Star Trek V, which is always my go-to feel better movie. And then I said, oh, I have to watch Death Wish for the show on Monday. And I watched Death Wish. And right away I said, wow, I saw the similarities between, you know, the god creature wanting the starship to get off the planet because he was imprisoned there, and Quinn being needing the Starship Voyager to get out of the asteroid because he was imprisoned in there. And I saw a connection between those two, which made me think maybe the god creature was actually a Q. They never say that, but
that makes sense.
It made sense to me watching those two episodes back to back. But anyways, guys, we got to take another quick break before we run out of time, so don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Trek Talking. All things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30. All hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking. Boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back. And that's the fun thing about Trek Talking, too, is you never know what we're going to talk about or where we're going to meander off to or what topics are going to come up, because this is an unscripted show. So there you have it. There's no script. There's no show notes. We don't know where it's going to go until it gets there. But anyways, what did you guys think about the episode Death Wish overall? I mean, Janeway had a tough decision to make. Because it wasn't until Q actually promised her, I'll bring you back to Earth if you find in our favor. Now, everybody knew that wasn't going to work because Janeway would never. Let's talk about that for a second. Wait a minute. I want to mention. So everybody knows that Janeway would not bow to that. There's no way that Janeway would have said, okay, the good of my crew above my honor, take us home, agree, right? Because she did in the episode, right?
Well, who is she offering? Who is he proposing to take back just her or the whole crew?
The whole crew.
The whole
crew. He was going to snap his finger and the ship would be back at Earth, and she didn't do it.
Where's the downside? And, the end of that, though? I mean, if it's the whole crew and everyone gets to go home, why is that an ethical lapse? That I didn't get.
Yeah, she didn't do it.
Because
but...
that means that means Voyager ends in season two.
Well, yes. Well, right. But ethically,
because their whole purpose is to try to get home, right? That's their whole thing. Is they're so far flung from everyone, and they want to get home. So I didn't get that whole. If it was just her, and he offered just to take her home, I could see her, you know, selflessly saying no, there's no way. But why would she pass by an opportunity to take the entire group back home and get everyone back reunited with their loved ones while they still are old enough to appreciate them? That seemed kind of weak to me. I don't know. It didn't seem like
she
it was well.
But I wanted to bring up another Starfleet captain who had, what if that was Sisko? Sisko would have done it in a heartbeat. He did. Sisko sold his soul to the devil to make a deal. It's a fake! To pull the Romulans into the war because the Federation was going to be wiped out by the Dominion. And he sold his soul and violated everything that he felt strongly about in order to save the Federation. Great episode, by the way. Wonderful.
Yeah,
Avery Brooks just nailed it. But if that was Sisko and his crew stuck on the Defiant way over there, and Q said, look, if you find in my favor, I'll bring you home. What do you think? Sisko would have done it, right? You think? I mean,
I think that's a different type of scenario, but probably.
I think the only reason it's convincing to me is if to have her sort of basically just go, and I think she said something to along these lines where I just don't trust you, Q. Right? It's just like, it sounds great. He says he's going to do it, but she's just like, you know, you'll do something, and I just don't trust you. I think kind of putting your chips in that corner makes more sense, right? But because otherwise, it's like if she legit could take everybody home, to not do it is just, you know, a very odd thing to do, given her arc and her motivations. So,
well, I think like Charles said, it's simple. The show would be over. So that's, you know, it ain't going to happen, but she could have ended the whole series in the very first episode. She could have made a very different decision and ended everything and been right back at Earth and never even had that whole thing happen. But again, it would have ended the episode. So, I mean, it would have ended the series before it began. So, you know, there's that. But Q did offer to bring her home. She did say she did turn him down. But in the end, did she make the right decision? I mean, we saw the decision she made when Tuvok and Neelix got merged together into Tuvix, right? And we were always debating this one. Did she make the right call by killing Tuvix to save Tuvok and Neelix? The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one or the few. And she made that call. What about in this case? She knew that Q wanted to commit suicide. Quinn wanted to commit suicide. And she finds in his favor, he becomes mortal. But then there's a twist at the end. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. There's a twist at the end. When Chakotay and her are talking about what are we going to do with Quinn? He knows everything. And they're deciding where they're going to put him, what department he's going to be in, and the doctor calls. You got to get down to sick bay. He ingested the Okefenokee plant or whatever it was. And there's no cure, and he's going to die. And then Q shows up, the Q, John DeLancey, says, I gave it to him. What did you think about that?
Emma.
I mean... were you like as wow as I was when that happened?
I think that's Q's way of just making sure that he's gone. I don't think Q wanted to deal with him.
Yeah. Well, you know, you think that Q got permission from the... You know, he could have permission from the Q Continuum to help him on his way. I mean, again, it's not clear, but overall, I enjoyed the episode. I thought it gave us a nice insight into Q, into the Continuum. We got to see the Q Continuum from a different perspective than we usually see it from John Delancey's point of view, but this time we get to see it from Quinn's point of view. It's a little bit a different version of the Continuum. But what did you think, David? Overall, what did you think about the episode?
It was a good episode. I liked it. I'm kind of a toss up between is the Q race, as you could say, a good thing they added in or whatnot. But then, as I think about it, the Q might have actually been around since Captain Kirk, you know, like with Charlie X and everything, because she could have probably been a Q too. So this whole idea that people having superpowers, you know, you got to kind of be careful when you're putting these in the series because almost anything can happen, and it's just a lot of plot armor coming involved. So as far as this particular episode, it was okay. I mean, just like any other Q episode, you know, lots of stuff can happen. So I don't know. Are we rating it or something? Is that why I'm trying to?
We're just talking about the episode itself. And do you think it was relevant to Picard and what we see of Q in Picard season 2?
Well, considering that Q is in there, I think it's all relevant because, you know, it's the same actor who played Q, and I don't know whether or not maybe he was being punished because he killed off Quinn, but I don't think so. But also, where did we know that Q is not affected by time? When was that brought up?
In the very first episode when he snapped his finger and made himself old.
Okay, well, couldn't that just be a disguise?
Well, I suppose, but he said his words to Picard were something along the lines of time hasn't been, what did he say, Charles? Time hasn't been kind to you? Or
hasn't been kind.
Yeah, he makes some comment about time, and he goes, oh, well, let me fix that. And he snapped his finger and aged to the same age as Picard. So that would lead you to believe that Qs aren't affected by time, at least not like we are.
Well, I think that could also just mean that he just, since they don't age because they're immortal, that they snapping their finger could almost mean doing almost anything, like sending the ship further out, farther than any ship has ever gone before, meeting the Borg for the first time, or, you know, maybe just snapping his finger probably could just mean he could do anything, really. And I don't think they're – I think they are affected by time, but they are not aging like we are. So I don't know if they can literally go back and see – time at all at the same time, but I don't know. I just never really heard that Qs were timeless, basically.
Well, how about you, Charles? What do you think?
It was an interesting episode. I think this ties into some of the episodes of, let's get a little bit of talk about morality. As you talk in Tuvix, Measure a Man, and several others, it's a hard subject that Star Trek's willing to discuss. And it definitely is one that's going to throw questions out of, okay, there is no right or wrong answer. There just has to be a choice. And it takes a lot of work to make these kind of choices.
Absolutely. And what do you think, Paul? You get the caboose on this one.
I think it was a good episode. You know, it's interesting when you haven't watched a particular corner of the franchise in a while, right? And I haven't watched a Voyager in a good long chunk of time. And it's interesting to go back and check it out again, right? Would I have liked it? I don't know. I think probably a pretty objective thing would be, I don't know if I would have liked it as much without John Delancey being in it, right? I feel that he and Kate Mulgrew, you know, they're like the A players, right? They really, really are. And I think they're just delightful, you know, because they're like, you can see the theatrical training that they have, right? They're really great. You know, same with like Tim Russ, right? Really focused. A little bit of Neelix and Kes goes a long way. But this is a good script, right? And I think it was a really good a good story that built on, you know, giving us more about the ideas of the mythology of what the Q are. And I really think this is a good choice to chat a little bit about because it does kind of tie up with the arc that character has been on through Picard this season, right? Because I think at the end, the reason he gives the poison to Quinn is because his mind has been changed by him, right? It's like he's kind of come over to have, if not agreement with him, respect for his wishes, okay? And that's the through line of this story, right? If it's a meditation on assisted suicide, which was, you know, be appropriate for the time that this episode was written, right? It's like it's more about Q's acceptance of his right to make his own choice, right? So when he gives him the hemlock, he's basically saying, I don't necessarily agree with you, but I respect your autonomy to make your own decision about your life. And so I'm going to help you do that if that's what you want, right? Because I have the ability to do that. And so it's a measure of respect and acceptance. And you can take those same themes and kind of carry that over to what they did with Q's character and Picard. So it's interesting stuff thematically. I think it was, it showed that, you know, Q had the capability of learning from something and changing his behavior from what he's learned, which we hadn't really seen a lot of before. And probably that's a huge, aspect of why he continues to have so much sense of kinship and affection for John Luke, because he always changes his perception as a result of their encounters. And he always seems like Q learns something from those interactions. So I thought it was a really good episode, you know, as the Q ones usually are. They're more thoughtful because they tend to be more meditations about the nature of mankind. So I'm glad I saw it again.
Absolutely. And listen, guys, we wrapped up our conversation about Death Wish and a little bit of Q talk. But guess what? Thursday night, what are we going to talk about on Thursday night, Paul?
Oh, yes. We're going to talk about a very cool second episode of Strange New Worlds. We're going to talk about a landing party. We're going to talk about, well, not yet, Lieutenant Cadet Uhura. Cadet Uhura, and we're going to talk about the biggest captain's cabin that anyone's ever seen, ever,
and
in the history of Starfleet.
And barbecued ribs. We got to talk about barbecued ribs, too.
And we're going to talk about one of the first depictions of a unique alien species that we saw on this week's most recent episode, which I thought was really interesting. So episode 2, Strange New Worlds, Children of the Comet, we're going to have a very interesting, lively discussion, I think. Lots going on there.
Yes.
I'm super excited to talk about that.
And we're gonna go back a little bit. We're gonna do things kind of the way I used to do them before. And I've pulled some sound bites off of the episode, and I'm going to play a sound bite, and I'm going to ask each one of my co-hosts get a different sound bite and a different thing to discuss. And that's what we're going to do on Thursday night.
Intriguing, sir.
We used to do it that way a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And we kind of got away from that a little bit, because I kept getting in trouble from Paramount for copyright infringement and whatnot, but we'll see how it goes. We'll see what happens. Okay. So,
Rebel.
Well, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. So Thursday night, Children of the Comet, 7:30, same bat time, same bat channel. And next Monday, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do our Monday Night Trek Talking to about I, Grok, Spock. And if you don't know what I, Grok, Spock is, Google it. Okay? So I'm going to tell you, Google it. It's real. It's legit. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about all the different actors who have played Spock through the years. And there's been many. Why was Spock such an influential character in the Star Trek phenom? You know, what made him that? And we're going to talk about Spock. It's going to be a spectacular show on Monday night. So you don't want to miss that. All right, guys. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I'm starting to lose my voice here. So anyways, it's a good thing the show is wrapping up. I want to take a second and say thank you so much to David for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, David.
Yeah, it's fun.
And thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, friends. It's been awesome.
It's always fun, isn't it? And also, thank you so much to Charles for hanging out with us. It's good to have you back, Charles.
It's always fun. Glad I can start making some of the Trek Talking Twos.
And I just want to say to everybody, please get your vaccinations and stay safe. Be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fan. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.